You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen. But do you recall the most famous reindeer of all? Come on! Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose. And if you ever saw him, you would even say it close. Come on, come on! All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer games. Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, come on, Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you ride my sleigh tonight? Then all the reindeers loved him, and they shouted out with glee, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you go down in history forever. You go down in history forever. You go down in history. What?
That is going to be fun. I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
Did I get the names right for the reindeer?
Let's see.
Welcome back to the Gregory Neeson Show, the voice of the underdog, the voice of DMX. You know, the woman in there sounded just a little bit like you.
That's what I was like, when did I record that?
I'm like, you know DMX? All right, I'm all over the place now. Welcome back to the Gregory Neeson Show, episode 92. Your top five, and we're going to talk about your top five comedians, talking comedians especially, because our underdog spotlight this week is Asha Davis, comedian, writer, Madison Avenue ad exec, plus a proud Torontonian, now calling Harlem home. And she's going to share with us about the come up as a rising star comedian and what you should know about the hustle, like the real deal. And hopefully before we get out of here, she'll at least share who her top five comedians are of all time, too. Ooh. Asha Davis in the building.
Hey, it's nice to be back.
Hey, it's nice to have you back. For those who may not know, who may go, oh, she sounds familiar because you thought that was her with DMX. Break there. That wasn't her, but it sounded like her. But where you might have heard her before is that she was part of the original start of this whole thing here. And we're happy to have you back.
Thanks. Nice to be back.
Yes. And with that, the phone lines are popping too. I think we have two callers right now. So I don't even know how to handle this abundance of you in the studio, callers on the line. I'm going to attempt to see if I can get a caller on the line first, and then we're going to go to Asha. Name it where you're calling from. Caller. Name it where you're calling from. Caller, are you on the line? All right. We'll try that again later. Asha Davis, welcome back.
Hey.
First, you are really becoming a big-time comedian. I've been watching your Instagram and Facebook, and I saw your name was on the flyer.
It was on a flyer. Yeah, my first time being on a flyer.
Okay, where were you last night?
Last night I did a show. It was on 44th Street. It was at a spot called the Producers Club. Shout out to the venue, shout out to Mike Wachowski. This was a dope show. You know, it was a really fun show, and it was also my first time doing 10 minutes on stage. So usually as a comic you do sort of your type five, so this was also my time doing 10 minutes on stage, and so it was dope too.
Ooh, I can't.
Like a milestone, you know?
That's a big deal. And we're going to get into like what it's really like to be a comic, because I think I'm funny at the, you know, Thanksgiving table, and then it's different than if I got to stand up in front of people for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Whole different ball game. With that though, I have a fond appreciation for comics.
Yeah.
Oftentimes they are underdogs themselves, and they tell the story of underdogs.
Yeah.
With that, I like to ask everybody who comes on the show, before we get into everything else, when I say the word underdog, what comes to mind for you?
You know, underdog is somebody that nobody expects to win. You know, somebody who is coming in and their opponents or their adversaries seem likely to beat them. You know, I think definitely, you know, in the context of comedy, a lot of the people that do this are, you know, white males from the suburbs, you know, so already me coming in as a black female is kind of like, well, nobody expects her to be that good. So it's kind of cool, because in this stage, I feel like being an underdog in that respect works in my benefit, because it's like nobody expects me to be funny when I go on stage. So I'm always over delivering in that regard, you know?
Man, no, you bring up, it's a big deal when we talk about race and gender. As I was trying to think about my top five lists of all time, I was a bit, you know, there was a certain emotion about the fact that there weren't a lot of women even in the mix.
Yeah.
When I Google like a lot of top 10s and top 20s. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you're out there making it happen.
I'm trying.
So with that, you talked about 10-minute sets and things like that. What's it really like, the hustle of becoming a comic?
It's so funny because, I mean, you as a, you know, general human being who loves comedy, you know, you see a Netflix special or you might go to a comedy club and you really don't really know what it took for that set to come to be, you know what I mean? And I think, you know, the comedy is very strategic. There's very set steps that you go through as a comic to sort of quote unquote make it, you know? And so it starts with deciding that you want to do stand up, you know? And so you take your time and you sort of craft your first set. And it's always a tight five when you can go to open mics and, you know, you'll always get a 5-minute block, you know? And so you do that, you sort of do that tight five and you go around and you do as many open mics and as many things as you can do with that 5 minutes until it's as tight as possible and as funny as possible. Then from there, you start getting to do, you know, shows, like real shows with your tight five. And then from there, you start getting to do, you know, bigger and bigger shows. Now, all of a sudden, you might have 7 minutes. Now you might have 8 minutes. You might have 10 minutes.
You know? Oh, you mean like you had?
And then it's like, then, you know, so once you get your 10 minutes, then, you know, you try to perfect that. And then, you know, the next step is 15. The next step is hosting a show. So, you know, one of the things you see is the ability to have that crowd interaction. You notice hosting, you know, it's a skill, you know, to be able to pick up somebody from a crowd and just come up with a quick joke like that, you know? And so being a host is a key thing. And then also, then basically you start to, once you hone these skills, then you put a tape together and that's when you start getting to audition for places like Caroline's and Comedy Cellar and, you know, the bigger sort of clubs, you know, and you kind of have to earn your stripes before you get to do those types of venues. And then, you know, hopefully you get a Netflix special.
Okay. I mean, I want to make sure. That's why I'm glad I have you on now, because I know it might be hard to get you once you get that Netflix thing going. So I can at least, when you do get the Netflix, I'm going to just play this as if you were like, we're a guest on the show. I'm like, we have Asha today, who you see on Netflix. And then we'll just play this over and I edit out the Netflix.
Then you
part.
Get a Netflix special and you cut to the special. Yeah that'd be hot.
Now, you talk about that first five.
Yeah.
Does it go smoothly? Like, you know, they laugh all the time and it just, you just been like easy going,
no.
Just rising to your 10 minutes.
You know, I mean, I think it's definitely a process. You know, I've definitely had some shows where people laugh less, you know, I've definitely had some shows where it's like, whoa, people are like coming up to me after the show, like I'm a celebrity, you know, like, wow.
Oh, you are.
You know, but I mean, Gregory, you're my friend, you've been to, you know, a number of my shows and you have commented on the difference between, you were at my first show, yeah. You know, so the difference between the first time I ever did stand up versus the last show you were at, it's a
totally different,
you know, and this is something where you can't practice by yourself. It's one of those skills where you gotta be out there and doing it for people. So I think that's what is also part of the art and the thrill of it, is that you can't just do it in your room in front of a mirror 1,000 times.
I know, but that sounds, now that you, when you put it like that, you mean I gotta practice in front of strangers who might boo me? To get better.
Exactly. There's always a chance of getting booed. I've never been booed though. I've been doing it for a year and change.
We'll see that.
But cool. I have seen somebody get a shoe thrown at them on stage.
Well, that's also because you're talented and good at what you do. But I want to highlight something you said. There's strategy and there's work to this.
Yes.
It's a profession.
It's a plan.
You don't just make, I want to just, I mean, I know this, but I want to just make sure for those who might be sitting out there thinking they were funny this weekend with their family and that they could like do a set this tomorrow and just walk onto the stage. Just help me understand, for those 5 minutes, for example, did you just walk on stage and start talking for 5 minutes, or how much time even went into that 5 minutes?
I mean, the first craft, like the first crafted set that I had, I literally wrote it. I was on a plane in LA, and then I wrote it, and just I had 2 weeks off of work, you know, and I really spent that whole time crafting this, performing it for my family, for strangers, you know. And then when I felt like, okay, this is good enough for me to go on stage, then, you know, I did it at a show, and I thought that was decent. And that was a year ago. And even now I look back at the video from that first set, I'm like, that was terrible. You know what I mean? And it's like, to get to where I'm at now, where it's like, wow, that was really good. It took a lot of times performing, changing the order, doing it, taking feedback constructively, yeah, fixing it. You know what I mean? And also just being more organic and natural on stage. Part of comedy is sounding like you're having a conversation, not like you're performing memorized material, you know? And so you only get that level of comfort when you just do it.
No, I think that's so true. And, you know, I'm sure we can both relate because we used to do this radio show together. And sometimes I would tell friends like, hey, I got to get ready for my show. And it'd be like Saturday night. And they're like, what do you mean? Because they just thought that we would just walk in here and start talking. And I used to think that presentation that you're about to do tomorrow, you've been working on that 15 minute presentation for a month. And you think we just walk in here and start talking? So I think it's a great example of most things that work out take a lot of prep. And then the greats make it seem like it's just off the cuff. Mm-hmm. With that though, you could be doing anything, right? I always think the talented folks always get so much talent. So you're a writer, you're a comedian, you're an advertising executive, you're a strategist, you're an entrepreneur, like you could do a bunch of things in the world. Why comedy?
You know, I think it's really important in life. I think especially if you're like me, if you're an overachiever, to have something that you're passionate about. It's easy to drown in work and all of these other responsibilities. You have to have something that is truly yours and your passion that you are doing, you know, in order to feel fulfilled in life, you know? And so, you know, comedy is mine. You know, comedy is like my outlet that allows me to not take 1,000 Xanax pills a day. You know what I mean? Like that feeling of exhilaration when you are on stage and that validation of getting a round of applause or people being like, hey, can you be on my show? Like I saw you on this show and you're pretty dope. You know, it's like, that is like, that feeling is like no drug, no, nothing could give you that feeling. And I think that's why I do it, you know?
Man, it's a natural high. And you get to also make a difference in people's lives in a way when you're on stage too, right? You get to give them an outlet to sometimes just...
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool when people of color, especially women of color, come up to me afterwards because it's like, you know, they'll be like, representation matters, right? Yeah. And it's like, having people come up to me on stage or afterwards and being like, I really liked your set, or you were really speaking to me, you know, I it's cool because I mean, I'm not the typical quote unquote black comic in the sense that I'm Canadian black, which is just a different type of black person.
That's a different black.
You know, exactly. You know what I mean?
I don't know many Canadians.
And like, you know, I'm not going to like, I did grow up in the suburbs for the majority of my life. You know what I'm saying? And so like, you know, I'm not pretending that I'm something that I'm not, you know? And I think that a lot of people can appreciate that. And it's like, you know, I can rep for the female nerds out there too, so it's cool to just be like a voice that's not always there.
Shout out to the nerds out there, we appreciate you too, the underdog nerds, words as they are affectionately called sometimes. With that, there's a lot of folks who listen to the show who are on the come up, on their comebacks, and they might be an aspiring comic. They might be at that first step you talk about, which is like they're literally trying to figure out, do they want to choose comedy?
Yeah.
What's at least one must thing they must know about being successful on this grind of being a comic?
You have to write out your set. So that's...
You can't just wing it?
No.
What?
You can't, no.
I'm just going to get a
good talk. When you think, that's the difference. The people that just think they're funny around their friends and they just go up on stage and you know there's no craft to it. They didn't write it down. There's no whatever. That you could tell. You could definitely tell. Like, even if you go to comics like Jerry Seinfeld or, you know, big comics, Steve Martin, like, you know, you look at these guys, they write out the whole set. They analyze, you know, videotape your sets, watch the tape afterwards and see, and, you know, analyze it. Treat it like a job. Treat it like it's something you genuinely want to get better at, you want to get promoted at, because that's how you actually get better. And definitely don't think that just because you got laughs on your first two times out,
they don't always come.
That you're the next Dave Chappelle. Trust me.
Hey, as we say in sports, you're only as good as your last game. You got to keep bringing it. And guess what? Underdogs out there, to her point, guess who also has notes every time they come into the studio to do this radio show? Mm. We don't just walk in here and do this. I love that. You got to put in the work.
Yes.
With that, though, before we get out of here, I do want to get your thoughts on your top five comedians of all time. Today's episode is called Your Top Five.
Yeah.
And someone who's in this mix.
Yeah.
And is going to be one of the greats one day.
Yeah.
And, you know, before you get that next week special, we had you on here. Who's your top five? Not including yourself.
Well, definitely Dave Chappelle, Richard Pryor, Chris Rock is in the top five in that order, okay. You know. But then, you know, my last two are less predictable. Ellen DeGeneres. Actually, okay. So these are comics that I study and like watch countless, like all their specials, watch their YouTube videos, whatever. Ellen DeGeneres stand up, for anybody that has not seen it, she is a genius. And then, you know, my last pick is obviously Eddie Murphy. You know what I mean? Nothing's gonna, somebody could come out with a stand up set years ago, and somebody could come up with a stand up set years ago and basically it still holds up 30 years later. Like, that's genius, you know.
I love it. So now you make me feel better about my top five, because some people question it, but I like the way you put it.
Yeah,
that some of my people, my top five, are because they're special to me.
Yeah.
And my top five are actually Cat Williams, who's special to me, mm-hmm. and someone I've appreciated coming up. Eddie Murphy, Bernie Mac, Dave Chappelle, and Chris Rock.
Nice.
Those are my top five. With that, though, if folks want more Asha Davis, and they should,
yeah.
How can they get in touch with you? How can they follow you before you get that Netflix special? You want to get on board now.
Follow me on Instagram at Asha Destiny.
I love it. I appreciate you coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been great.
And thanks for letting these underdogs out here know that they get to choose this life, and then they get to put in the work, and then eventually they're going to have the 10-minute shows, the hosting shows, and then that Netflix special.
Then that Netflix special.
And as always, I'm going to leave you with my favorite quote. Underdogs, can't nobody do it like you do it. Nobody. Peace. Talk to you.